1:45 p.m. Eastern Moor Time. WEAF, New York.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Morgan Beatty, NBC military analyst and Washington reporter, in a continuation of NBC's invasion news coverage. Today, Mr. Beatty gives you the latest news of the invasion and an analysis of the war to this minute, direct from our microphone at the War Department in Washington's big Pentagon building. And now, Mr. Beatty.
This is Morgan Beatty speaking from the Pentagon in Washington. I'll be back in a moment with news of the day.
Meanwhile, please listen to the following announcement, an important message for every man and woman in New York City. Here's a way to get real value from a $1 bill. Just enroll as an associate member in New York City's Police Athletic League, and that dollar will be put right to work, giving many healthful, wholesome hours of recreation to a boy or girl in one of the crowded sections of town. Enroll at your neighborhood police station or send a dollar to Police Headquarters, 240 Center Street, New York 13. Now back to Morgan Beatty in Washington.
Nor does he know whether this is the main attack on Fortress Europe from the West. The Supreme Trump Command in Britain has achieved almost a miracle of planning on news. In front of us today are scores of dispatches from reporters who've gone through the fire of landing operations. Also, there are reports based on the briefing of correspondents at Supreme Headquarters, General Eisenhower's headquarters somewhere in Britain. The correspondents there, from the tone of their dispatches and the blank spaces you can almost sense, are unable, for reasons of security, to give us a clear picture as yet. That's why I say the high command has achieved almost a miracle on the news front. We've got plenty of facts to go on. There's plenty of material for you and I to mull over, but it gives us no pattern to show just how the Allied battle plan is shaping up. I thought it wise to admit as much to you today so you would understand. As a matter of fact, we've just now got a bulletin a few moments ago from Zurich in Switzerland. It says that unconfirmed reports from Nazi-occupied Milan in Italy said today that a large Allied fleet has been sighted off Genoa and a landing on the Ligurian coast of northwestern Italy is expected hourly. Milan is about 300 miles north of Rome in another part of the European theater. But we must remember, these are Nazi reports. From what has come through from Allied headquarters, however, in Britain, we can begin to grasp the magnitude, the size of the operation in Europe, and tell why our initial landings were successful, why it's possible to reinforce the beachheads of northern France. The weight of Allied attack at the beachheads, the combined weight of naval power and air power, was too great for successful enemy counteraction, whether he had tried it or not. Accurate battle figures tell the story. More than 900 aerial transports alone were used in the opening blows. The invasion air fleet, 9 planes wide and 200 miles long, plowed across the channel today, and another air train with gliders tacked on behind, a train 50 miles long, poured in reinforcements. On the first invasion day alone, 13,000 flights were made by Allied planes from British bases. The Germans must have been able to figure fairly closely in advance on the size of this initial thrust at them from the air. They must have known that back in Britain, thousands more planes were ready to pounce on the Luftwaffe in case it should try at the outset to maul our glider forces. Therefore, the enemy held back his fire, held back his reserves in the air. He used only local air attacks, attacks from what we might call the crust of air defense along the coast. True, we may have knocked out many of their airfields in recent weeks, too, but whatever the cause, we lost only 70 aircraft on the first invasion wave, 12 of them troop carriers, 12 of them gliders carrying troops. But you might well ask, where were all those guns on the invasion coast? Why didn't they mow down the men? Here's where we should be most cautious. Some reports by returning correspondents, some reports from headquarters, indicate that those coastal guns, at some points, did go into action. Some of our beachheads were apparently held up for some time, but many more of our beachheads did succeed, and while losses were not what they were expected to be, it is still important that there's no report on these losses as yet, presumably because we do not want the enemy to know how successful his coastal defense system, his West Wall, has proved. But the main reason why the enemy's coastal defense system didn't work out so well is this, and what I report to you now you may have heard before today, but it seems to me to be the most significant fact of invasion yet released. The 4,000 warships that carried the initial landing forces across the channel poured 2,000 tons of shells at specific targets on shore every 10 minutes. 2,000 tons of shells every 10 minutes during the landing operations in a 60-mile stretch between Cherbourg on the Normandy Peninsula and Le Havre, the port city lying in between the Normandy Peninsula at other French port in the north and Brittany in the other peninsula. In view of the fact that a battleship, and there were 6 Allied battleships operating hot guns in the close quarters of the channel the other night, but in view of the fact that one battleship alone can pour out vastly more firepower, more accurately, than most air fleets yet used in warfare, in view of that, it's understandable that much of the enemy's responding fire from the shore was silenced when the initial landing parties dashed ashore. So the enemy's coastal defense zone, the great fortified, mine-trapped, tank-barriered zone, the defense he had counted on to hold us until he could tell the direction of our attack and its magnitude, that coastal defense strip failed him in the pinch. And at the latest news tells us, Allied troops have struck inland in France in heavy fighting, and the first Nazi counter-blow near Caen, 20 miles inland, has been successfully repulsed by our forces. At the same time, the latest reports also tell us that the enemy has now been cleared from all our landing beaches, and some of the beachheads have been linked up. That is, the fighting forces have pushed forward and fanned outward to join hands with landing parties a few miles down the coast. Reports from the Cherbourg Peninsula area at the tip of Normandy, another critical point of fighting, show a decided improvement at dusk today, that is, dusk European time. These reports indicate the Allies are making considerable progress along the whole front in between Caen and Cherbourg, despite bad weather and stiffening German resistance. You see, our landing parties are now trying desperately not only to link hands with each other, but they are working to attain certain objectives in the rear where our airborne divisions, and the Germans say we've landed 6 such divisions further back, or about 25,000 men, where our airborne divisions are holding off the enemy. Together, the combat teams that landed in boats and the airborne divisions landing further back by air are trying to create a huge beachhead to make a complete strip of Allied territory, perhaps 20 miles deep, and extending along the coast some 60 miles between Cherbourg at the tip of the peninsula and Caen. So much for the actual operations of northern France. But is this the main operation? And why was this particular area chosen for the first attack? We do not have official answers to these questions, but geography and the Allied main objectives in the Western invasion help us towards sketchy answers. The Allies have chosen as their first landing point or area in Western Europe a strip of French coast that is almost the farthest distance from Berlin of any in Western France. But it is not quite the farthest. Brittany would be a little farther west. But why was this strip of coast chosen? It's quite clear now that the heavy fighting around Caen, near Le Havre, answers this question. That's where, we were told a short while ago, the Germans have chosen to strike back with their mobile reserves. Not their main reserves, but the mobile forces held ready to back up the coastal defense system, the system that failed the Germans. Caen controls the railroads and highways in between the two peninsulas of northern France, so that it's possible from that point to fan out and cut off the peninsula of Normandy from the rest of France. The base of the peninsula, you know, is only about 60 miles wide, so that if our forces can hold Caen and spread out from Cherbourg, we will have achieved a huge beachhead against the enemy, a beachhead into which we can pour troops enough to stick. We who are not military men should keep in mind that in warfare, the flanks are the weakest positions of any army or fighting force, and it's only possible to use so many soldiers, so much fighting equipment on a given battle line. Now, if we, the Allies, should gain the Normandy Peninsula, our tremendously superior naval gunpower can protect the flanks of a line across the base of the peninsula where it joins onto the main geography of France. Our tremendously superior air power can prevent the Germans from striking back successfully. In other words, our fighters and bombers and transports will be in control of the air. Thus, the advantages of the Allied forces at this moment in the beachhead area as our superior air and sea power, these advantages are being used for all their worth. This means that as the fighting goes on, the infantry soldiers and the artillerymen, the fighting ground forces who must stick, will not have to worry seriously about their flanks on each side of them or on the air above them. They will have one job to do, a very difficult job and a costly job, because they will not have as great a force as the enemy can pour in, the job of sticking on a battle line 60 miles long. As we've noted before, only so many soldiers can be used on a given line, and a 60-mile-long line is not a wide battlefront. So, if we can only pour in the maximum number of men that can operate on a 60-mile line, the German's one superiority, his superiority on land, will be neutralized in this particular battle area. Thus, we'll be on an even footing with the enemy on the ground and superior on the flanks, that is, on the sea and in the air. It's fairly clear that this is the Allied plan for this particular invasion coast area. Now, let's go back to yesterday afternoon in the White House, where the President held his first post-invasion conference with newsmen, when he was cautioning us against overconfidence at this point. He used one sentence that sticks in my mind. He said, "The war's not over. This operation's not over. It's continuing." At this point, it's obvious Allied strategy to indicate to the Germans that this is only the beginning, that warfare is continuing, and the Germans themselves, of course, are very sensitive on this point. The fact that they give us, through Zurich, a bulletin reporting Allied fleets off Milan, north of Rome, indicates that they're fishing for information. The reason for this strategic purpose of silence about our planning is clear. We wish to prevent the Germans from knowing whether any more landings are coming and where they may be coming. If the enemy does not know, he can afford to risk sending very few reserves to the present fighting front, and our men will have to face less firepower, fewer bullets. That's why the German radio is constantly reporting further Allied activity. Activity like that reported from Zurich, and activity like that off the shores of France opposite Dover. They are reporting landings in that area in a guarded, sometimes garbled sort of way. They're fishing, again, for information which they will never get. So up to this moment, the main battle of Europe is the battle for the Normandy or Cherbourg Peninsula. The major fighting is at two points. Cannes, where our forces hope to pry that peninsula, in a sense, away from the geography of the rest of France and use it as a base for further attacks. The other main point of fighting is in the neighborhood of Cherbourg, because Cherbourg is a fairly large port, a port that can absorb heavy reinforcements, big guns, thousands of soldiers per day, many thousands more than we could land with full equipment any other way. And that's the story of invasion up to this moment. And now for a few last-minute bulletins. The Russian newspaper Red Star says the Red Army is poised for attacks on the Eastern Front against the enemy. This is obviously devised to prevent the Germans from releasing any more forces on the Russian front to face us in the West. That's very encouraging, this report in the Red Star. The Russians, you know, are only now beginning to realize the tremendous difference in land warfare and amphibious warfare. Their newspapers this morning are printing pictures of landing craft, those strange ships that literally vomit men and guns on the beachheads. It's the first sight many a Russian ever had of this kind of fighting machine. And here in Washington, we're getting all sorts of news today that hasn't been cleared up in recent days because of the invasion to come. News, some of it very important relatively, but of very little importance now that invasion has actually developed. For example, Chairman David Walsh of the Senate Naval Affairs Committee today confirms that we have, as I reported to you exclusively some time ago, sent an American light cruiser to Russia. But he says the ship were leased to the Russians. It still belongs to the United States. And then we have, as a few last-minute bulletins, Chairman Donald Nelson of the War Production Board reports today that he believes an expansionist economy sparked by private enterprise should develop after the war. That's all for now, and thank you. I'll be back at this same time tomorrow.
Ladies and gentlemen, around the world capitals and in our New York newsroom, NBC is standing by for new developments on the invasion. General Eisenhower's headquarters overseas has established the release hour of communiques at 11:30 p.m. British time, which is 5:30 in the late afternoon in New York. We suggest you tune to NBC around that hour each evening. The morning communique is released at about 5 o'clock in the morning, New York time, and the NBC newsroom's early morning broadcasts give coverage to that communique. At 3:45 this afternoon, NBC brings you a special 15-minute summary by the noted news analyst H.B. Kaltenborn over station WEAF. In the meantime, any important bulletins on the war reaching our newsroom will be put on the air immediately, interrupting any of our scheduled programs. NBC is now returned to normal programming, but the news of the invasion still has the right of way over all else. Morgan Beatty's news report from Washington is heard each day at this time, 1:45 over station WEAF. This is the National Broadcasting Company.